Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And we're Brettless. That's okay.
That's all right. He's doing dad things. That's the important thing. Always important. Hey, I've got a little bit of news, and I will give my mea culpa that I didn't do all the research on it, but apparently JMS has come out with the current state of the future of Babylon 5. And I'm going to read to you an expansion on what he said about some things about Comic-Con, which I haven't watched the YouTube video that I've seen linked to. But he expanded on what he said on Comic-Con via Facebook, and here's the post. Are you ready?
Certainly.
Summer, are you ready? And I quote, B5, the studio offered a full season of a new and rebooted B5 as part of a new distribution venue they were creating. Us and several other shows from the same studio were part of the same deal. We'd have a full season, a big budget, and total creative control. The negotiations, not between us, but between the participants of the venue, dragged on for over a year. We were told repeatedly this is going to happen, but finally, the participants couldn't make the math work. So we and the other three shows that they were hoping to put out there got set aside. At this point, I've told the studio that if this isn't going to move ahead, there's something else they need to consider, and there's a very informal negotiation going on now in that regard. We'll see where it goes from there. But again, B5 was never created to be a Deep Space franchise. We wanted to do our 5 years and get out clean. That was my intent going into this, and if that's where this ends up, I'm happy to stick with that. There are other film and TV projects I'm doing, including a deal we just concluded to write a pilot for Will Smith's company on a show that's been pretty much pre-sold for a full season overseas. Two bidders wanted badly for Europe, and now they're just looking for a U.S. partner. So, there you have it, folks. I think there's two or three things in here that are really interesting. Number one, that it looked like it was pretty good, but they couldn't get distribution going. That was interesting. Number two, offered a full season of a, quote, new and rebooted B5 as part of a new distribution venue. And then B5 was never created to be a Deep Space franchise. We wanted to do our 5 years and get out clean.
Okay.
One of the other things that kind of looking at, I'm looking at the JMS News community site and some of the things I'm gleaning from the post. And again, I haven't done all the digging. Apparently, the project was going to be a reboot of Babylon 5. There were talk of using some of the original actors, but in different roles. And that's about all I know at this point. And I will be better about finding out more of that as time goes on. But having said that, just to get it started, Summer, what say ye about a...
Well, do we even have a clear...
Miss Battlestar Galactica fan?
Yes. No, I was saying, do we even have a clear definition what... reboot and reimagining and remake, are there clear lines of delineation between
you know what I think I think they are three different terms for the same thing. I think that remake is become a kind of an n-word, if you will allow me that liberty, so nobody wants to use it, but they're doing it anyway, so we're going to reboot it, which means kind of revisiting it, reimagine it. That's kind of revisiting it. Now I will grant you that if you use the...
Yeah, I see reimagining as what Battlestar Galactica did, retelling the same story. Rebooting could be seen as what J.J. Abrams did with the new Star Trek movie. You know, just throwing a stick of dynamite in the room and working with the rearranged pieces.
Sure.
It can also mean picking up the story at a tangent from what everybody remembers and going off on that line. So we don't have any information on what Warner Brothers had in mind. You know, it could have been just something, we want a Babylon 5 reboot. What you got?
Yeah.
And you know, JMS had no answer for them because he's like, all right, why do I want to retell the same story I already told? And we'd argued about that before, but right. Starting, you know, the comment? Some of the same characters in different roles?
Some of the same actors in different roles.
How does that work?
Well, you'd cast Mira Furlan as president of the Earth Alliance, and you'd cast Stephen First as security chief Zach Allen. Or, you know, I mean, I'm not, and please, folks, I'm just, this is the example I'm using. That is not what I have, what little I've read. But from what I'm gathering, and again, I'm going to have to do some more research. So, yes, I am kind of throwing the grenade into the room here. But, you know, from what I understand, it was to go back and revisit the 5 years that we already have. It wasn't going to be necessarily the telepath war or what happened after Crusade or any of that. It's kind of going back to revisit it.
Yeah, jump-starting and retelling the same 5 year story. If my choice was that and no Babylon 5 for the end of, you know, till the end of eternity, I would take that. But if
that's kind of what Jan Schroeder says on the site, by the way.
But if there's other options for other stories in the B5 universe, there's no reason why you couldn't, you know, tweak the universe and tell a different story someplace else. Like we could get the shadow war that happened 1,000 years earlier with a much, much different tone on it. We could get the telepath war with a couple of details changed, you know? A couple of details of how it came about changed.
Sure. Sure.
There's a wiggle room in there. It all depends on what Warner Brothers said they wanted.
Yeah, and as of right now, I'm not sure what that is, and that's where research is going to have to be done.
I'm not sure we're ever going to find that out.
Well, no, I mean, I know. And we do have, you know, there's an interview over at the Babylon Project, and we'll get a link up to that so everyone can hear it. It's a British B5 podcast that's doing kind of what we did, deep geeking and whatnot. But having said that, and they have an interview with JMS that was posted on, I can tell you that right now, posted on the 31st of July. So it's extremely recent. I think the other thing here, this is one thing that I find interesting, and I'm not sure how I feel about this. On the one hand, JMS is approached to do more Babylon 5, and he keeps examining it. And you know, we got the Lost Tales, which was sort of a test balloon, as it turns out, for Warners to see if there's any money in the direct market. But you know, we've had Legend of the Rangers, and yet at the same time, JMS does continue to say things like B5 was never created to be a deep space franchise. We wanted to do our 5 years and get out clean. Well, I get Crusade. You know, he has gone on record as stating that his intent to do Crusade was as much to provide jobs for those people who had been working for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years on B5, and that he, you know, felt an obligation to help keep those people employed. But it's been 15 years now, you know, since we've had that. So, you know, part of my feeling is, Joe, if you wanted to do it and get out clean, now is as good a time as any is to just say, you know what, I've said what I've had to say. I'm telling new stories. You know, do you understand what I'm kind of wrestling with here? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. But Warner Brothers is, you know, for lack of a better word, they're all out of Harry Potter. So they're looking for something. They're grasping at straws. They have money to spend, and they're dangling that money. Say, who can make us something that'll make us more money?
Sure, but what's the motivation for Joe? And obviously, this is all conjecture because, you know, Joe's not here to say one way or the other. But
yeah. The conjecture would be either to. There's nothing to prove, and that's not my impression that anything needs to be proven, because I doubt the people who were in charge before are in any way still in their same capacities at that company. So there's no one to say, hey, remember how you did this? They're not there. They've moved on to other stuff.
Right.
I don't know. Hell, the motivation could be wanting to, you know, just shut all those fans up, give us something new to talk about. I don't know.
Well, but you know, by the same token, you know, you remember the outrage that he garnered from a number of fans when he's, you know, after Lost Tales came out, and he said, "Look, I'm not doing any more Babylon 5 until I get tons of money and creative control."
That seems like what he's getting now.
Well,
maybe
that's true.
Maybe something's changed in that, you know, five years now, because it came out in 2007, but they filmed it earlier.
Yes,
right. So in that 4 or 5 years, maybe something else changed.
I don't know. But, you know, by the same token, like you say, he's got nothing to prove. He's written screenplays. He's working on screenplays. He is writing scripts for arguably the single most recognizable superhero comic in the world in forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Even with creative control, even with all that, if part of your attitude is we wanted to tell the story and get out clean, well, it seems to me that in a sense you're kind of returning to the scene of the crime. I don't know. I'm not saying I have an answer, and I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. It just reading that Facebook post that just kind of struck me, and I'm not sure how to wrap my head around it, I guess, is really where I'm coming from.
I understood.
So anyway.
If you want more B5, we would prefer that JMS be the source of that new B5 content, because it is his universe. No one else on the planet knows it as well as he does. Except for us.
us
obsessives here. There is no easy solution to this. There really isn't.
Yeah, so I don't know. And maybe there isn't a solution. And maybe that's part of the quandary that JMS has. You know, he's, you know, look, I'm not going to do anything until I get this and this. Oh, you're giving me that and that. Huh, interesting. So, you know, I don't know. Anyway. All right. Well, Summer, do you have anything else that we can add for this open?
No.
Okay. Let's say we take a break.
Okay.
And then come back and do some deep geeking.
Will do.
Hi, I'm Kevin Batchelder.
I'm Wendy Hembrock.
And I'm Brent Barrett.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast called Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV,
where we discuss sci-fi and genre shows currently on television and some from the past.
We're fans just like you. So join us in our water cooler and back porch discussions of your favorite shows.
And strangely enough, you can find us online at tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.
Be seeing you.
Wait a minute. Isn't that what Bester says on Babylon 5?
Maybe. I never watched Babylon 5.
What?
Digging down to the minutest arcani of the B5 universe, this is Deep Geeking.
Oh, it almost is to cry. The Last Crusade episode, official.
Yes, produced, official.
Official produced Crusade episode.
Yes, but it didn't air at the end originally. okay, let's let's scrape together the atomized remains of that horse. Anyways. So, yes, appearances and other deceits.
Yeah. This is one of those mixed bags for me.
Uh-huh.
I love the story.
Okay.
The introduction of the propaganda machine. I don't know. What do you call that? What do you call that? The
external
propaganda machine, jury consultants, political consultants.
That's what I was going to say. Consultants.
I don't know. What do you call them? Plague consultants? What do you call them? Seriously.
Public relations. It was all about public relations.
Public relations.
That's what that was all
image
about.
Image consultants. That's it.
Yeah, right?
Image consultants. That's the word. It's all about style, show, flashiness, much more than the substance.
Yep.
You have to cut an imposing figure in a bellhop uniform.
Yeah. Now, here's the question I have for you. If we hadn't seen the really, really cool black uniforms with the jackets and the slick red turtlenecks and all that, would you have thought those uniforms were really that awful?
Yes.
Okay.
You know why?
Why?
Because they look like somebody took a whole bunch of old Star Trek Next Generation uniforms and shinied them up.
I would have said grade them down because they only had strips of red as opposed to lots of red.
Well, no. The silver was shiny.
Well, that's true. Yes.
It was shiny. Yes. And I cannot verify this because I didn't go back and look for it. But apparently there is a shot of there in there of someone what was the episode where they were actually wearing them?
Well, there's a handful of them, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, apparently in one of the episodes, somebody actually does a Picard maneuver with the jacket tuck.
Oh, yeah, Gary Cole does. He stands up and does that, yes.
That's the only reason why I went, damn it, Next Generation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. I agree with you. They are certainly not stellar designs and you know, from reading in some of the Crusade, what the hell happened, you know, JMS. I think that the original design from the costume designer was going to be one thing and it ended up being something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it just didn't make the translation from paper to screen. I don't remember which.
But I just thought
so, that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just funny.
Yeah, So you say you love the story. So tell me, what is it about the story that appeals to you?
It actually feels like I'm drawing a blank on the episode with the Vendrizi, third season.
Oh, Exogenesis.
Yes, yes. It feels like a better executed version of that.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, you've got an alien intelligence, for lack of a better word, hijacking humans to, you know, just basically hitching a ride because we're so warm and cuddly and yeah, got all that extra space in there. We make good pets. I mean, pickup trucks or something. But we send our consciousness out to colonize stuff so we don't endanger ourselves. That was a little kind of a vicious twist that I didn't see coming, and that I appreciated the oh, we're not benevolent. This is all about us, babe, attitude of it, because
yeah,
you know that's out there. And right. the tragic turn at the end, I know what you're looking for, don't kill me, you know?
Right.
That's one of those things where, gee, maybe if you'd spoken up sooner, would have turned out different.
Would it have, though?
I don't know. What if he had said that? He said, take us to a planet and I'll tell you where to find the cure.
What do you think Gideon would have done?
Yeah, because that's a completely different take. You know, hey, well, you know, trade your crew for your ship or trade your crew for your entire
race. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
a horse of a completely different color.
Well, not only that, but if you look at it from the strategy of a poker game, that's one hell of a raise.
Yes.
That's going for
all the chips and shoving them in.
That's a galactic all in.
Yes.
And from the gambler's perspective of, you know, hey, take us, you know, drop us off, we'll leave your crew alone. No. Okay. Drop us off and I'll tell you where to find the cure. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's one of those things where the ante has been raised and what do you do? So I liked the irony of that whole situation. I know where you can find the cure.
I know what you're looking for.
Yeah, I know what you're looking for, and then zap, gone.
Yeah.
The way they spread.
Uh-huh.
I shouldn't say the way they spread. I should say the way they communicated after invading or infecting or whatever you want to call it. The sly little, I guess the conspiratorial feel to it for those first few people who were, I don't know, hijacked, for lack of a better word.
Right.
It added a level of, I don't know, I'm a big fan of mysteries and thrillers.
Okay.
You know, so that kind of thing goes, it gets my attention. I go, oh, cool. What's going on here? It makes me pay attention a little bit more.
Okay.
You know, because once you get that little hook of intrigue in, I want to figure out what's going on. So I start paying attention to more of the details. And that appeals to me. But yeah, I liked the story. I liked I liked the sly little dig Mr. Wells has. Nobody knows better than me about reinventing yourself.
Yes, yes, about political survival.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm like, nice nod. I like it.
Yes, right. That was good. I have a different take on it. I ultimately liked it for how it handled and resolved what I think is a fairly cliched Star Trek story or science fiction in general. And that is, yes, your people are become possessed by an alien, whatever. And it's become such a cliche that for me, it's hard to sit through the first 10 or 15 minutes of the aliens taking over and nobody quite figuring it out. You know, because it's just like, oh, God, not this again. Okay. You know, it's just like, you know, I've seen this before. But having said that, I liked how it ends up getting resolved, because I like, well, first of all, I really love Max in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as much Max's episode as anything else.
Yes.
You know, I like how he cracks the lingual code.
Yeah, that scene in the cafeteria or whatever, a lounge or whatever, where he's talking out loud, working the problem out loud. And
he's also kind of hoping he's impressing people, you know?
Well, I mean, there's a little bit of arrogance in there, but there's also that there's an element in there of the childlike joy of figuring out a puzzle.
Right.
And that is that one little bit sums up what drives Max. You have a puzzle. He knows he's the smartest guy in the room and maybe the next two rooms. And he's bound and determined to solve that puzzle to reinforce the fact that he's the smartest guy in the room and the next two rooms.
Although I did like the bit where he's sort of – when he's eating over his laptop, which I loved. That was just a nice touch. And he tells the waiter or the guy, hey, bring me more of these. And then he just kind of goes on this thing about salt. And the look that he gets, he knows that that's Max's joke on the guy. You know, he's just, oh, I'm going to, this guy thinks I'm going to be a jerk, so I'll give him what he expects. But I liked how he figures it out. And as soon as he figures it out, the aliens figure it out that he's figured it out.
Yes.
And then it becomes a race to the bullet car. And
the looks on them when he doesn't even realize that he's in danger yet. And then he realizes it and he goes, oh, crap.
Right. Yeah. Right. And at that point, from then on, I like how they are dealing with how to resolve the problem. You know, the stakes are, to borrow your term, the ante is upped when Possessed Wells takes one of the people and says, oh, Captain, you don't quite get it. And, they pull the host, the entity out of the host, and then they go mm-hmm. and shoot the guy. but by the same token, Gideon's like, well, look, you guys think you have the upper hand, but you don't quite. And, when he shows up in the space suit in the lounge, and he's just standing there with a PBG, it's like, what are you going to do, kill us? No, I'm just going to shoot your kneecaps off.
And we can fix that.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. Finally.
Well, you can't kill us because you'll kill your crew. It's like, kneecaps can be fixed.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't mind. I'll hurt them. It's okay. that I can live with because they'll live. That's okay. And to that point, part of me at first was a little like, well, how come the aliens just didn't rush them, and overwhelm him? And then it occurred to me, it's like they're so arrogant that they've never been in that position before. So they don't, they don't have the strategy of – their strategy isn't one of overwhelming by numbers. Theirs is one of stealth.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I'll buy that they don't figure out, hey, there's 20 of us in the room and only one of him. And even if he shoots the kneecaps out, he can't shoot them all fast enough. In the end, that didn't bother me that they didn't figure it out, because that's not the kind of thinking they do.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's not I would guess that the brute force method was not part of their makeup, nor the makeup of maybe any of the people they took over, because they have access to those people's memories.
Obviously.
And I would guess that it never dawned on them, okay, we rush them with six guys. Two people might get their kneecaps blown off. The other four guys get an arm and a leg each. And
and then you take the helmet off.
Yeah, you take the helmet off, and then, the other guy gets him. So I could see where they wouldn't have that sort of pack mentality strategy going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
On the other hand, things like the mysterious alien writing, and again, that's earlier on. That's in the part that was driving me just a little bit crazy with, why are they writing on the walls? you know, is that part of the arrogance? Ha ha ha, we're making graffiti here and you can't read that it says your mom.
Come on, man, bulletin boards. Keeping the community up to date on what's going on.
Okay. Oh, great. Okay. I guess. But at that point, why don't they just like write on each other's foreheads as they're walking around?
Too obvious.
And writing on the walls isn't?
Well, no, no, no. If you write on somebody's forehead, they're going to put that person in sick bay and sedate them. Something mysterious pops up on the wall. Nobody knows how it gets there. You're going to go, huh.
But that gets back to my problem with the cliche part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Creepy writing on the wall. Huh. Instead of creepy writing on the wall. Seal everything off. That should be the first. See, creepy alien writing.
Now, was the creepy alien writing the writing of the alien they found or the writing of the entities?
The writing of the entities, because that was one of the things that Max was pointing out. Was that
okay, why the, are they
the language? The
didn't
language
match.
Right the, didn't match. Right, right. What right, was okay. in the log didn't right match with what was on the walls. And the other thing that he didn't pick up on, but I guess maybe you can forgive this, is like all the readouts and whatnot are probably in a different language. You know, so his point about, you know, an oral language being different than a written language, you know, he should have picked. But that's okay. That's nitpicky and really not even bothersome. It is just creepy alien writing on the wall. Sorry, that's, you know, no, that's like that. That's like big neon sign stuff for me. You know,
okay.
It's just, anyways, but again, after that, you know, and the stuff that this, the introspective stuff with Max is marvelous.
Yes. Yeah. His whole agonizing over what happened. That was a little unexpected,
but not out of character.
No, it isn't.
That's what's really nice about that.
Yeah, he's wondering. Like part of him, he seems so arrogant, right?
Yeah.
And then he wonders why some guy, some random security guard, would lay down his life to protect him.
Well, and he even points out to Sarah, you know, he almost reveals the fact that he knows what others' opinions of him are when he says, if he had known who he was doing this for, would he have done it?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's really heavy stuff. And those are the things in this episode that really, I think, elevated above the typical alien possession theme. You know, and then we get to see Max's arrogance again when he catches the plan. You know, and here's the thing. This is the other thing that I do like about this episode. Not one person has all the answers, but almost everybody has a piece of it. So that everybody has a third dimension to them. Max kind of is like, what? I've never said the air is human. That's stupid. But then Sarah goes, no, wait. Here's what the saying really is. And he's changed it. So there's a clue there. And then Max goes, oh.
Yes.
You know?
Again, with the puzzle solving.
Right. But I like that he didn't figure it all out.
Yeah.
You know? He got hung up on this one little thing. Serifs. Figures.
Yeah, the indignance at that's a cliche. I don't use cliches.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And so he's kind of hung up on that. But then when Dr. Chambers says, "No, wait, idiot, this is what he said. This must be a message for us." You know. And then the arrogance comes back in with, "Hey, I got a plan, but you're gonna have to trust me." So you know, to your point, it keeps us in suspense as to what they might have figured out. But, you know, so I like that. And even Kevin, who is portrayed as a real two-dimensional, flaming, fashion, interior designer type, you know, he's a walking stereotype until that scene where he's sitting there with Matheson looking at the recording of the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that goes, no, take a look at this. They're all touching each other.
Yes.
You know, my job is to look at patterns and lines and here's the pattern. And it's like, whoa, dude, you've just given this guy an extra dimension.
Yeah,
and helps solve part of the puzzle, you know. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, wow.
Yeah, he saw something that stuck out to him. He just casually mentioned it because he was bored and wanted to talk to somebody. And he says, no, look at this. This is all wrong.
Yeah, right. So that was great stuff. That was really neat stuff. And then to a certain degree, the closure, you know, one of the things that I think was neat is when the guard, when Stuart Greenberg is shot and basically, you know, put in a vegetative state, you know, that's traumatic enough. We get the closure where they get to use his body as a means of solving the problem, which makes it circular, but you still have the human element of what all that sacrifice means.
Yes.
And the ending, you know, when Max is still trying to kind of wrap his head around it, and, you know, he asks, well, who speaks for him? And, you know, you're expecting some kind of, oh, generalized, we all do by doing our job. But Sarah says, no, Gideon does. And then there's that great scene with Gary Cole composing the letters.
Yeah. The commander's worst duty, writing that letter.
Yeah. And you can tell that he feels every bit of it, you know, as often as he's had to compose that letter. And to a certain extent, he's got the form letter down. You can just tell that every one of them just kind of eats at him when he has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think Gary, you know, this is another episode where I think Gary Cole kind of, you know, I mean, we keep talking about it, but man, I would love to have seen what he'd done with the character if he'd had the opportunity to take it for a few years, because he is very human. And yet he's very much the Starship Commander.
I want more Crusade, damn it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So, and all of this, and the thing that we haven't even really touched on so much, all of this, the B-plot was an excuse to try to create a bridge between all those episodes that have been shot first, with the bellhop uniforms, and trying to maintain some semblance of continuity for the whole series. You know, so trying to make all that work, I think, you know, what a daunting task that was. And somehow through it all, you know, JMS does the best that he, you know, he is squeezing lemons to make lemonade in a lot of ways with this.
Yep.
With this script. So.
Yeah, I think as a story, like I said, I always liked the A story in this mm-hmm. episode. The retconning of the uniform boondoggle.
Yeah.
They worked with what they worked with. It's all good. What do you say? There's so much more story here, and we didn't get it. We're not going to get it.
Right. Yeah, and that's a lot of it. And in many ways, this episode is a very good microcosm of Crusade on a story level, on a production level, on a meta level. You know, of trying to get something like this made and trying to make it make sense even when you're presented with the senseless.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's wonderful to see John Vickery again.
Oh, yeah.
You know. Hey, you know what I just realized watching this again tonight? I've never seen John Vickery and Kyle MacLachlan together in the same room.
That would be a neat trick because John's voice is nothing like Kyle's.
Well, Christian Bale's voice as Batman isn't anything like anybody's.
True.
See, I think he's, yeah. And that all could be done in post-production anyways, all that voice-changing stuff.
Nah. That's good old. Now, if we ever saw Kyle dress up as a Minbari, maybe.
No. Right. That would be interesting.
Yes.
That would be interesting. All right. Oh, you know what? Here's the other thing that I will point out about this episode. I think from a music score standpoint, this is one where I have to agree with all the Evan Shen detractors. Because I think, like, the scene where Max is being chased by the aliens possessing the crewmen. You know, Greenberg gets music is so over the top. Dramatic music.
I have to add in a little mitigation for that scene. I'm going to claim gratuitous overuse of slow-mo.
Yeah, well, that's
so,
another one.
So he had to fill in.
I don't know. But, they, you know, he could have done something, I don't know, something different. Not necessarily better, but it was just that kind of, you know, it was chase music 101. And kind of the other thing, you know, when Gideon at the end is composing his condolence letters.
Mm-hmm.
And as the scene fades out and the music comes up, it's overly dramatic as though to say, this is an important thing. It's like, you know, we kind of got it. It would have been nice to have something a little more understated. But now having said all that,
mm-hmm.
How much of that is on Chen and how much of that is on Straczynski?
Considering that it doesn't seem like Evan Chen did any more composing for television ever, I don't know.
Well, but, you know, because my point is that Straczynski and Copeland, by extension, because they were both producers, you know, they're the guys who say, yeah, okay, that's good, roll with it. You know, now whether or not their attitude was, all right, well, it's there and we're just getting so beat up on the series that it doesn't really matter. We don't care, you know, how much of that was in there that it was like, yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter anyways, we're getting canceled.
I don't know. I would like to find out if it was they just went with whatever he got because of time constraints, that they didn't or couldn't give him more guidance on the sound they were looking for, or if they were just so busy fighting tooth and nail with TNT that music wasn't as important as getting more episodes.
Well, and that, you know, that those are all valid points, you know, it's hard to say, but, you know, in the end, the question is how much willingness does one have to forgive those things knowing that there may have been extenuating circumstances?
Yeah, I'm going to surmise that they were, you know, on the grander scheme of things, getting TNT to give us more episodes or nitpick about the music. I'm thinking they went, you know, they chose their fight well.
Well, and I'm not arguing that one way or the other. You know, it's simply an observation, because I know not only with Babylon 5, but some other some of my own personal favorite movies or television series, knowing some of the backstory for those things, I am more forgiving of the flaws, because my assumption is that had not those stressors been happening, things may have turned out different or better. And I'm just wondering whether that's the case with the music for Crusade and maybe Crusade in general.
Oh, well,
I don't know. That's just, that's your deep philosophical question for the evening.
All right.
All right.
So we will ponder that question to be yes. answered later or not. And, do you have any emails for us or any?
I've got an email or two that we can read when we come back from the break.
Excellent.
I'm Michael R. Menengay.
I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Michael Stackpole.
And I'm Brian Brown.
Join us for an exciting romp through literature and books.
Romp? We're not romping.
We're supposed to be cool.
That's right. Okay. It's the cool
It's the smoothing sounds.
The smoothing sounds.
I don't know, but romp just brings forth images of Michael in tights, and I'm so not going there.
Well, which Michael?
It doesn't matter. Neither one would be very good.
If you would like to join this thing that we do every week, it's called Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Take two. Welcome to Dragon Page, cover to cover, where the elite meet to discuss literature.
Okay, let's go back to the tights images. Yeah.
Dragon Page, cover to cover, where you'll never know what you're going to get next. And we continue. I have to mention this. Oh,
yes.
My goodness. I feel old. Jason Davis, our good friend.
Yes.
Tweeted this out tonight, Wednesday, August 10th at 6:53 p.m. Pacific Time. Babylon 5 started filming 19 years ago today. Happy anniversary to all those who were there at the dawn of the Third Age.
Mm.
19 years ago today is when they started filming. Think about that.
It was 19 years ago today when Valen told the Shadows they had to pay. They've been going in and out of style. But Zaha Doom is wider than a mile. Okay, I ran out. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right, Edmund, there you go. That's your start. All right. Okay. Wow, 19 years. It's hard to believe.
Yep. Wow. 19. 10 years! 10 years, man! Oh, sorry. 19 yeah. years. Wow. Wow. What are the odds? What are the chances that Warner Brothers convinces JMS to do something official for a 20-year anniversary or 25 if the zombies haven't gotten us by then?
I would say 25 looks to be more likely than 20. My sense of it, judging from that little Facebook post, is that if nothing was going to happen now, it's not likely to happen in a year. Because from you know, JMS is saying it took them a year to try to work out the distribution deal in order to go ahead with production. They couldn't make that happen. And so that's why the whole thing fell through. So I don't know. It's hard to say. You would have thought they would have done something for 10 years if it mattered that much to them.
Nah. Not really. Because the studios weren't as obsessed with the anniversary DVD box sets back then. Jaws did a 20th, 25th, and 30th. Star Wars did what? 10th, 20th, and 25th, I think. And a 30th one. And So I don't know. Maybe for 25 years of Babylon 5, they give us new DVD packaging, maybe. something where
it'll
the
one giant box set.
They already have the giant box set. It's a big slip box where all five sets fit in. What I'm thinking is like something smaller and less prone to glue breakage. Oh. I told you my set for season 3 is completely destroyed.
Yeah. I've treated mine with a little more kid gloves, but I also, you know.
Well, no, I've treated it with kid gloves. It's just the glue.
Yeah.
Repeated opening, the glue just dies. It gives up the ghost.
I don't know. Well, maybe I've had a better luck with it. I don't know. I don't know. As somebody had on the JMS News Forum. Let me see if I can't find this person. Here we go. This is an individual whose handle is Kosh N on the JMS News Forum, and I like his little signature. It says, Warner Brothers is Lucy. JMS and we fans are collectively Charlie Brown. Babylon 5 is the football.
Oh, yeah.
I think JMS also used that analogy in our interview with him, too, now that I think about it.
Yes. But it's a good one.
Yes, it is. It's very appropriate. Unfortunately. Anyway, hey, I've got an email here to read to ya.
Okay.
You ready? This comes to us from a gentleman named Phil Rutland. He writes, Dear Babcasters, I love your show. I discovered you guys about 2 years ago when I was laid off, and in the long span of 3 months without work, I found your site and listened to most of your podcast. Especially love the Deep Geekings. I would often watch a batch of episodes and then listen to your Deep Geekings afterwards. It helped keep my spirits up in between the Sisyphean task of filling out job applications. Just listened to your interview with Tucker Smallwood, and it's easily among the top 5 interviews you've done. I had no idea that Mr. Smallwood had lived such a life, and I'll definitely be checking out his book. I just wanted to express my gratitude to you all for your hard work over the years and the wonderful podcast you produced. Now, Summer, you're going to laugh when I read this last one too. You will laugh. Are you ready?
Sure.
Phil finishes with, and Phil, by the way, thanks for that wonderful email. We're glad that we were able to help buoy your spirits there in a dark time. But all right, Summer, you ready? Just a quick suggestion. Have you tried interviewing Christopher Franke? His music is amazing, and I'm also curious about his Tangerine Dream krautrock days. Well, Phil, obviously, as you were trying to cram in all those Babcasts while you're doing your job, just the repeated calls to get Mr. Franke interviewed and Summer's great frustration and being unable to make that happen.
Yes, I believe there are several episodes in season 2 and podcast season 3 where you could probably hear me grumbling about the lack of response from Christopher Franke, you know, in Tennessee.
Yes. Anyways. Yeah. Sorry, Phil. That one's not happening.
Yeah, we tried. I even tried to get Evan Chen, but he seems to have fallen off the planet. So,
poor guy. I hope we didn't just run him off the earth. I liked his music generally. You know, like I said, earlier in the Deep Geeking for what he did for appearances, that it didn't quite hit the right notes, but I thought it was good.
Yeah, I liked the theme. I liked the way some of his interludes worked with the more human action. They didn't really work with the space battle action. And we all know that he did a bang up job with the Pakmara on whatever action.
Yes. My little Pakmara.
That has got to be some of the funniest music I've ever ever heard.
Yes. And then you combine that with the head tilt. Yeah, wonderful stuff. Well, that's all I've got for email. Somebody have any last things that you want to add here?
Not yet. We do have some changes coming up on the podcast, but I think we can save that for the beginning of our listener feedback episode coming up next week.
Yep, I think that's probably a good thing for that.
Okay. So right. I guess we're done.
Yeah, for tonight.
For tonight. And as always, the website is BabylonPodcast.com. If you want to send in your emails, that email address is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. We have forums. We have lots of people chatting over in the forums, farpointforums.com. We have, for your viewing entertainment, a new, fresh, brand spanking new archive of the video that we've been recording of the live stream. You can see that page over at blip.tv/Babylon Podcast. We even have some early episodes that have Jeffrey in them. So
yeah,
wind your way back and check those out. If you miss hearing Jeffrey's voice, we're working on that. You can go back and listen, say hi. And
hi.
As always, the phone number to leave a voicemail is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that the aliens touched us all.
I ain't got nothing.